The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Okay, great to see you folks. Well, as of 10 o'clock, the postal vote's been announced. I haven't heard the exact details, but it's, what, 61 or 62 or something, yes, and 38 or 39, something like that? Okay. Now, I know we don't all necessarily follow Jesus. There's lots of people who come along who are just thinking about or inquiring. But if you're a follower of Jesus, it's not hard to imagine situations where it's going to be difficult or awkward to put your hand up and say, well, actually, I belong to Jesus and I have a different view about things. And not just about the whole marriage issue. Sometimes it's awkward in terms of family, or it's tough in the workplace or socially, or whatever. It's just when your family gets together. You may be, if you're a follower of Jesus, maybe you're the only one in the family. I know with my wife's family, most of her family are not Christians. They're very successful. The brothers, Chinese businessmen, who've done very well. And I say to Kathy, you know, when your family gets together, all 30 or 40 relatives, I feel like the village idiot because I'm a minister. And she said, oh, no, honey, that's not the reason. But as only she could. Now, when it comes to actually, I guess the bottom line is that feeling of fear. What happens? What will people think of me, or what will they do to me, or how will it affect my life if I put my hand up and say, I follow Jesus? What's interesting is one of the key leaders in the Christian movement, that would be the Apostle Peter, had exactly that issue put to him, and all four Gospels record how he failed and then how things changed. And what I wanted to do as working through Matthew's Gospel is look with you today at what happened with the Apostle Peter and see what we can learn from him. So in your handout is a part of Matthew chapter 26. Next week we'll come back and look at the same part of the Bible and the idea of Jesus and him being afraid of something. But I won't look at that today. I just want to look at Peter and his, if you like, failure to stand up and acknowledge that he belonged to Jesus. And so I'm going to read that quickly. I'll just read the highlighted parts and then we'll see what we can do. So here we go, fear and following Jesus. So Matthew chapter 26, and I'm reading from verse 31. I'm going to go quickly, you'll get the vibe. Then Jesus told them, this is after he's celebrated the Passover with them. This is the night before he died. They're now in the Garden of Gethsemane. Gethsemane means the olive press. Judas has already decided or been to the religious leaders and will lead the soldiers to arrest him soon. Verse 31, then Jesus told them, this very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. He's quoting an Old Testament part of the Bible, the book of Zechariah, that predicts this happening. But you see verse 32, he says, but after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee, back up to the north. But the disciples can't hear, it doesn't compute him talking about his resurrection yet. They just can't process that. Verse 33, Peter replied, even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Now, I can identify with Peter. He's quick to speak and sometimes a bit slower to think. So he's spoken up too early. Verse 34, truly I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. The word for disown is quite a good translation. It means actually say you don't know someone or you have no connection with them. So disown or deny, I don't know him, I have nothing to do with him. Three times. Peter says, verse 35, Peter declared, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. And they go to the garden, known as the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prays. We'll look at that next week. He takes Peter, James and John with him. See verse 40, then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour, he asked Peter. The answer pretty obviously is, well, no, we couldn't. Jesus says, watch and pray so you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. In the original language, the word peirasmos, it can mean temptation or it can mean testing. And you can see how they're very similar. The idea of being tempted about something and the idea of being tested, very, very close in the idea. And I think what Jesus is saying to them is, there's a great test coming. There is a great test of your faith or your trust in me, and you need to be alert and awake to face that test. But you see, it's the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. It's kind of, it's almost come into the English language now as a cliche. What does it mean? Well, for all our good intentions, we are weak people, physically, spiritually. Okay. We're working our way through Matthew chapter 26. If you've just come in, I'm just going to work through the highlighted parts that talk about the Apostle Peter and how he is, well, what happens. Let's keep reading. We're up to verse 47. While Jesus, was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived, and with him was a large crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them, "The one I kiss is the man, arrest him." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Nothing unusual or weird there. In the Middle East, then and now, it's perfectly normal for men to meet and to kiss each other on both cheeks, just like a handshake. Jesus replied, "Do what you came for, friend." The men stepped forward, seized Jesus, and arrested him. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Now, he wasn't trying to cut off his ear, he was trying to open up his head like a watermelon, but cut off his ear. 52, "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him, "for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures," meaning the Old Testament, "be fulfilled that say it must happen this way?" Now have a look at verse 50 to 54. That's Matthew's account of this man having his ear chopped off. But when you look at Matthew, who did it? And what happened after that? Well, you're not told exactly. Now, what I want to show you is a way, when you've got the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, each of them will tell you different things about the same story, and it'll kind of give you a 3D picture of what happened, but also each of them has their own agenda, if you like. They have a way they want to tell the story. They want to show a particular aspect of it. And I'll show you this just to give you the idea of how it works with many of the stories in the Gospels. So we've just read Matthew. Here's John, right? John's account of what happened, the ear, the sword, etc. Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, notice Peter's the same one that we've been talking about all the time, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? I'll do what needs to be done." We'll say more about the cup next week. It's likely that John was from a well-to-do family. He knew the high priest, or certainly knew members of the high priest's court and staff, and so he knew Malchus was his name. And Jesus says, "No, I'll be obedient to the Father." Now, when it comes to Luke recording the story, does anyone know the particular job that Luke did? What was Luke's day job? Sir? He was a doctor, right? A physician. And Luke's always soft-hearted. Luke's always on about healing and the poor and caring for people and stuff. And what does Luke tell us? "And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, 'No more of this.' And he touched the man's ear and healed him." And when you put all those together, what do we know? Simon Peter's the one with the sword. Malchus, the servant of the high priest, lost his ear, or at least temporarily. And Jesus healed his ear. But I don't know if you notice, I'm going to have to really quickly, you can think about it later. Each of them has their own agenda in the way they tell the story. So for example, Matthew, yeah, we got this almost lined up, Lachlan. Matthew, Jesus says no to violence to defend him. He says, "Put the sword away. You can't do that." It probably still works, mate. I think, yeah. You can't defend him with a sword, and Jesus is still in control, but particularly Matthew's always trying to show you the Old Testament part of the Bible is being fulfilled. God promised this, and it happened. So that's what Matthew emphasizes. John, through the whole of his gospel, is always on about Jesus saying, "I've come to do the will of my Father, to do the will of God the Father." And that's what he emphasizes out of it. And Luke is always wanting to show the compassion of Jesus in healing this man. Almost, almost. Okay, but do you see the idea? When you put it together, you've got the 3D picture, and then each of the Gospels will show you something different. That happens with lots of the stories. Make sense? Okay, I'm going to settle for if maybe three people nod. You ready? Make sense? Oh, good, thank you. Okay, right, we've got at least four nodded then. Okay, let's verse 57. Those who arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed at a distance right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. Interesting, if you go to John's Gospel, you'll see that John actually had to kind of get Peter in through the gate into the high priest's residence, because John knew someone to be able to get in. Verse 59, the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Then the high priest puts Jesus on oath and asks him, puts him on oath before God, are you the Messiah, God's great king? And Jesus has to say, yes. And then you see what happens, verse 65. Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, he has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? He's worthy of death, they answered. And they spit in his face and struck him with their fists. Others slapped him and said, prophesy to us, Messiah. Who hit you? Now, there's a beautiful irony about to happen. Remember what Jesus predicted about what would happen three times that night about Peter? So they've just slapped him in the face and said, prophesy to us. They're mocking him about being a prophet. And Jesus' words are about to come true, because you see exactly what happens with Peter now. Just what Jesus prophesied. So verse 69. Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a big, hairy, strong Roman soldier came past and said, it's not what it says, is it? Who was it? A servant girl. A little girl comes past. A servant girl came to him. You also are with Jesus of Galilee, she said. But he denied it before them all. I don't know who you're talking about, he said. One. And then he went out to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know the man. Two. And after a little while, those standing there went to Peter and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Okay, so he talks like someone from the bush, right? It's kind of a giveaway. He's from up in Galilee. Then he began to call down curses and he swore to them, I don't know the man. Three. And immediately a rooster crowed. And then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. It's interesting that all four Gospels record this story. It's a great statement about the historicity of the Gospels, that you would record one of your great leaders making a total mess of things in terms of following Jesus. Why did he deny that he knew Jesus? Well, it's pretty obviously he's afraid. I mean, they're lining up to execute Jesus, and if you put your hand up and say, I'm with him too, it's a big chance they'll say, all right, well, we got room for two. And so he's afraid. But maybe more than that, he's done his best with the sword and that didn't work, and then the one that he thought was the Messiah, God's great king, has kind of given up, is not fighting back. And I think Peter could feel his dreams turning to ashes in his hands. And just a little while before in the garden, Jesus had said to him, there's a great test coming. You need to be alert and you need to be prayerful and watching. And Jesus was doing that and Peter was asleep. Now, what do we know happened with Peter over the next 30 years? Well, here's from Evidence for Christianity, for example. It's a good summary. We know that about 30 years later, the Apostle Peter was crucified, almost certainly in Rome. So we're told, the early church fathers are unanimous in claiming that Peter died in Rome by crucifixion during the persecution of Nero in AD 64. There's a little bit, whether it's 64 or 65, that I haven't been able to quite sort out. As for crucifixion upside down, and that's one of the stories about that, that's also testified to, but the evidence is weaker for this particular form of crucifixion. The apocryphal Acts of Peter, which is a writing, but it wasn't historically reliable enough to make it into the New Testament, is the earliest reference to crucifixion of Peter upside down. The earliest reference to the martyrdom of Peter comes from the letter of Clement of Rome about AD 90, and then there's a whole lot more stuff in the early church writings about that. So Peter died, and certainly, almost certainly in Rome, crucified, possibly upside down because he didn't feel worthy to die the same way that Jesus had. Why is that so important? Now, Rodney Stark, who's, if you come regular, I haven't quoted Rodney Stark for at least 12 hours, okay? He's my favourite author, I get bagged about it all the time. Rodney Stark wrote The Rise of Christianity. The second half of this is a brilliant, brilliant book. What Stark's thesis is this. In the early 60s AD, Christianity faced some kind of a crisis. And that is that they had expected Jesus to return any day, and it seemed that he hadn't. As you read the New Testament, Jesus never promised to, any day. So the return of Jesus had been delayed. There were Christians, the gospel had spread quickly, but it hadn't taken over the world. Stark says there were three crucial events that happened in the 60s that were vital for the continuation of Christianity. He says this, James, the brother of Jesus, who was the head of the Jerusalem church, was killed by the high priest there in the year 62. In 64 or 65, the apostle Paul was executed in Rome by Nero. And in 65 or 66, Peter was executed in Rome. The significance of that? Well, let me let Professor Stark tell us. He said, not only did the three most admired and holy figures of the time die for their faith, undaunted either by the delay of the second advent or by the small number of their followers, it would appear that Paul and Peter could have avoided their fates, Paul by recanting and Peter by flight. That Peter could gladly follow his Saviour to the cross, despite the fact that the end times were delayed, must have had a powerful reinforcement of faith for the Christians not asked to pay such a high price for belonging. How much more credible witnesses could be found than those who demonstrate the worth of a faith by embracing torture and death? It's the point, isn't it? Once someone will go to the cross for what they're saying, you know they're sincere. They could be wrong, but you know they're sincere. Now, what happened? What changed Peter from being afraid when Jesus is arrested to being prepared to be crucified himself? The obvious answer is the resurrection of Jesus. It's what the New Testament's claiming, that Jesus rose from the dead, that showed he truly is the Messiah, actually God become one of us, that he died, that he's conquered death, that he really is the risen Lord. And that transformed the disciples who then went out and transformed the world. What's interesting, if you look, I don't have time to show you, what's interesting is for each of the resurrection appearances in Mark, in Luke, in John, and in 1 Corinthians, Peter is singled out. So in Mark, the angel says to the women, go and tell his disciples and Peter, I'll see you in Galilee. In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says, first of all, he appeared to Peter and then the apostles. It's the same in Luke. It's like Peter's particularly chosen. He needed to see the risen Jesus, particularly. In John, it's kind of a special thing that's recorded that Jesus does. Let me show you what, and see if you can pick what is it that Jesus is doing here for Peter who denied him three times. Here we are. When they'd finished eating, this is after they meet Jesus on the beach there and he's got the fish cooking and that sort of thing. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. One. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. Two. A third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. What's he done? Three denials. Three times Jesus asked him, do you love me? It's like he kind of like pulls the thorns out of Peter. Three times, do you love me? Do you love me? And then he says something that's very interesting. He says, very truly I tell you, as he speaks to Simon Peter, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands And someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And he said to him, follow me. It's the prediction of how Peter would die with his arms outstretched. What about us in Australia and 20 centuries later? Well, around the world, the Voice of the Martyrs website is dedicated to the persecuted Christian church around the world. They list, this is 2015, in their 2015 global survey, they list 50 different countries where the followers of Jesus can be persecuted, their possessions taken, imprisoned or even killed for naming the name of Jesus. As you can see, largely Islamic countries there in the middle, but also there's also communist countries, etc., just kind of general all-purpose tyranny. You notice Australia, we don't even have kind of salt and pepper sprinkled on us. We are not listed as a country that persecutes. And New Zealand didn't even make the map. All right. Anyway, they'll get used to that. What about... it can still be very difficult, can't it, following Jesus? Now, I know we don't all, but you can, if you're not a follower of Jesus, you can kind of, if you like, think yourself into the space. It can be difficult. At work, depending on where you work and depending on the issue, you know, 10 a.m. this morning, it's announced that the same-sex marriage bill, you know, the survey is voted yes. It's going to be difficult to stand up and say, well, actually, I disagree. I follow Jesus. In your family, in your workplace, advice? The way the New Testament is structured, there's four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, and then the book of Acts, which is the early history of the Christian church, and then 22 letters written to Christians. Of those 22 letters, two of them particularly deal with persecution or standing up and naming the name of Jesus. One is the book of Revelation right at the end, and the other is 1 Peter. Peter's first letter. And I think Peter particularly writes about this because he's had to learn to deal with it. And if you want to read about his advice, 1 Peter's only 5 short chapters. But let me show you what he says, or one of the key bits in the letter. He says this, who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? And writing to the followers of Jesus, the answer is, will anyone? Well, actually, yes, it could happen. But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. Why don't be afraid? Well, answer. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. What's he saying to the Christians? You understand the implications of the resurrection. Understand that Jesus is Lord, that Jesus is in charge, and he's there with you. You may still suffer, but don't be afraid. It's the next little bit that's particularly interesting, I think. He says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. A couple of things he's assuming. If you live with Jesus as your Lord and live that way in the way you treat people and the way you behave, you'll get opportunities to speak to people about the hope that you have. Right? Now, you can take the initiative and etc., but here he's saying, you live that way and people will be curious, you'll have the opportunity to speak about the hope that you have. He also says you need to be able to explain why you have the hope that you have. It's not just enough to say, well, because I believe it. Can you explain why you have a hope in Jesus? Why do you live with Jesus as your Lord? It's actually not that hard to learn. But notice what he says also, but do this with gentleness and respect. Why? Is it because if you're a Christian, you're expecting to be on the losing side? No, it's the exact opposite. If you really do believe that Jesus is Lord, that he's in charge, and that he stands with you, you don't need to be aggressive and cranky and pushy. And you can actually be gentle and respectful. Why? Because Jesus' people are out to win people, not just win arguments. Okay? Because we care about people, we can be gentle and respectful and know ultimately the truth carries its own authority. I'm not saying it's easy. I don't have any trouble giving the reasons why. My problem is with gentleness and respect. Okay, I'm sure you're much gentler and respectful than me. But that's what he says. And that's how you actually win people or win a hearing. The other thing perhaps to remember from the garden is Jesus says, the great test is coming. And so if you belong to Jesus, you need to be spiritually alert, spiritually awake, prayerful, rather than spiritually asleep.
Earlier on, when Peter cuts off the ear,
yes,
you said you compared the four Gospels, and Luke's the only one that says he put it back on and healed it.
Yes.
If you a miracle like that, you would expect the other writers to have mentioned it, wouldn't you?
I mean, it's yes. Would you expect? The question is. Luke's the only one that mentions Jesus healing the ear. Yes, it is interesting though. The Gospels are very selective in what they say. Matthew wants to emphasise you cannot defend Jesus with a sword, and the Old Testament predicted this, and so he doesn't mention the healing of the. I would have mentioned it. Matthew doesn't. John wants to emphasise Jesus being obedient to the Father. So they each have their different agenda. Just Luke's a doctor. I just think he loves healings.
But it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, at that time, to heal the person who's coming to rest.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you would think that would be one of the highlights that you would record.
My guess is that Malchus had a bit of a think about it later that night. Yeah. Yeah. Not just the fact that he would have had to throw his glasses away. If he'd lost an ear, anyway. Other thoughts, comments? Ruby?
When Peter answers the Lord, I love you, and Jesus answers, feed my sheep, how does that...
Oh, okay, yes. In John's Gospel, when Jesus asks Peter, do you love me? And he answers three times, and Jesus says, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. He's actually talking about teach and care for and love my people. The word shepherd and the word pastor are exactly the same word in the New Testament. So he's just saying, be a pastor, be a leader, care for, love, look after my sheep. Being called Jesus' sheep is not really a compliment, but it does show he loves us. So, yep. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir.
Yeah, verse 50 I found interesting to see where it talks about Judas has just betrayed him. And if someone betrayed me, I'd be pretty angry at them, whereas he says, do what you came for.
That's a good question. I've wondered about that word myself. Jesus has already warned him not to do it. It says if you to do this, you'd be better if you'd never been born. And yet Judas goes ahead. The whole thing about Judas is quite complex in the New Testament. I can find at least four different actors at work in what Judas does. Judas chooses himself. The Old Testament predicts it. The devil influences him. And Jesus himself knows from the beginning who would betray him. And so it's quite complex with a whole lot of different actors working together. What the word friend there means particularly, I'm not sure. What you see, Matthew actually has quite a lot to say about Judas. In a little while, Judas will have remorse over what he's done, but it's sorrow rather than repentance. And he has no hope and gives up. It's a tragic story.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.